welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Monday, January 20th, 1:06 in the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with Ag Director Bridget Riedel. I want to thank everybody for joining us on this dangerously frigid afternoon. Coldest day of the year, and no records being broken, but, boy, I tell you what, wind chills even currently are between 40 and 50 below across much of the area. So extreme cold warnings have been issued for the entire state and into Minnesota. So you can't escape it going anywhere around the area. It's just brutally cold out there. I know some vehicles didn't start this morning. And boy, climatologically, this is the coldest time of the year, but it still hurts. There's no way around it.
Well, and right now, you know, we're not breaking any records. So this is January. We've had this before. Thankfully, it's a cold, short stretch. Mm-hmm. We'll have a little bit of a warm up midweek because we've had years where we saw this for 10 days or more.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been, it's mind boggling when that happens, but yet it does. And I think if we're worried about how, granted, our modern day life could be inconvenienced. Cars aren't starting, things are frozen, etc. You aren't living in a tar paper shack on the prairie like many were about 140 years ago. That would be a lot less pleasant, I'm afraid. Yeah. And they made it.
They did somehow. It's we've become spoiled, so to speak, with all the Yeah, it's but cold is cold, and I had somebody I had an email today. Dean, how does or does the wind chill affect our vehicles? And the quick answer is no, it does not. It does not affect inanimate objects. Now, with that being said, I'm sure a lot of you have seen on some of the older vehicles, they will sometimes put cut out a piece of cardboard and put it on the grill to not allow that air to flow in, but really it doesn't matter. It's the actual air temperature that will affect your car battery, and it typically doesn't. They can freeze at 40 below. Now, we haven't gotten there, nor are we expecting to get there, at least actual air temperatures around here. But once it gets to about 40 below, that's when you start having serious issues with possible battery just freezing, period. Then you're not going anywhere.
Well, and we've got some of that going on already. Lots of folks are still using the cardboard trick for tractors. We do have to keep some heat within those right now because we're out on the move with them. A lot of vehicles getting plugged in these days, and they aren't EVs. We're just trying to make sure block heaters are working. In fact, I had a picture this morning from a friend who the seal on his oil filter let go in the cold this morning, and was sitting under a pool of oil sitting under a vehicle. So weird things happen when it gets this cold out. And remember, if you are in a fender bender, it's probably going to be way worse damage only because it's so cold. Stuff will get damaged much faster. So take it easy out there and just be cautious as you're traveling.
Right. Now, Bridget, I know, and I think I know the answer to this, but just going to throw it out there anyway. So we always tell people, hey, limit your pet's time outside. The ears, the tail, the paws, they can all get frostbite in a matter of minutes. Why does this not affect our livestock as much? Is it just more hardy, or what's the exact reason?
They're built differently, thicker hides. Remember, the hair on those animals is hollow to act as an insulation. Mm-hmm. They are bred to be outdoors. Now, if we brought a newly shorn Great Dane outside and he just doesn't have the hair that's going to be able to be helpful to him, the same way we don't bring up southern thin-hided cattle to this region at this time of year. So we keep an eye out for all of those things and try to make it as easy on our livestock friends as we possibly can. Right. So a little warm-up is going to be nice. In fact, most ranchers will tell you those big swings in temperature are tougher on animals than if we just stayed moderately steady and kept, whether it's going to be colder or warmer. But those big swings are a lot tougher for the animals' bodies to regulate.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we've got John on line one. John, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. It's been a while, John. We were worried about you.
Well, No, I just try not to annoy Bridget.
Thanks, John.
But Mr. Winsocky, I have a disagreement with you.
Oh, here we go. It wouldn't be the first time, John.
Well, I'm going to tell you this from the mechanical perspective. Yes, wind chill actually does have an effect on your vehicle, but all it does is, just like a human being, it's what it does is increase the speed at which your vehicle assumes room temperature. You following me here?
I'm trying to follow your logic here, John.
Okay, if you put your vehicle out facing the wind,
sure,
it'll increase the speed at which the vehicle gets to whatever the ambient air temperature is. So what a lot of people don't realize is, the modern vehicle, in the old days, we used to run the heater core from the engine. It would go through the heater core and then right back to the engine through the water pump area. Okay, well, in order to increase cooling efficiency on the modern engine.
John, one second. Addison?
Yep.
Hey, Addison, can you cue the Jeopardy theme music here while John is giving his answer? Okay, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you.
Right. Yeah,
so
right.
Anyways, and this applies to most of your modern vehicles. What they did is they took the backside of that heater core and they run it right out to the radiator to increase, basically to increase the cooling efficiency. Well, the negative to that is, now you're taking a longer trip and going through that radiator before it's drawn back into the engine. So yeah, a lot of your heaters on your cars are not as efficient as they used to be, but by doing that, they could actually save money because they could reduce the size and weight of the radiator.
Okay, John, I'm not going to argue with you. You're partially right. I don't want to tell you you're totally right.
I'm a little more than partially right, because I can tell you that it's like a world of difference in my 94 GM truck from my 84 GM truck in terms of how much more heat comes out of that, the heater, because I actually do use a winter front on mine.
Okay, so John,
it actually warms up faster, and it's and my cab temperature is actually quite a bit nicer.
Okay, so John, assuming that car batteries with the components inside of a car battery, they will typically freeze at 40 below. Okay.
Correct.
Right. So if we have a 60,
a fully charged battery. Now a partially charged one will actually freeze at a lot warmer temperature than that. It'll actually freeze around, freeze at, say, 15 above.
Sure. So, with that being said, will a car battery freeze with a 60 below wind chill?
It will not while it's in operation, but it will actually reach whatever the air temperature is much faster, because you have air movement in that engine compartment, Dave.
Right, right.
So the wind chill does have somewhat of an effect. Now, it doesn't have, like, a major effect. In other words, like, the battery is going to feel like it's 60 below. You know, that part is kind of moot.
Right.
But like I said, now, with the cooling system, yeah, you're forcing more cold air through the radiator. So you're actually cooling, the operational temperature of the radiator down quite a bit faster than if, say, the vehicle was sitting still or sitting with the nose out of the wind. You following me?
Yep.
You know, it's no different than you or I. If you or I tuck around the corner of the sunny side of the building today, yeah, it's still cold out there, but we're only going to be affected by whatever the air temperature is. In other words, what is it right now? Probably 15 below?
Right around there, yep.
Yeah, so that's what we're actually going to feel right now. Now, you walk around the corner of the building, yeah, that's where the wind chill comes into effect, because it's getting us technically to a feels-like temperature, which is what's hastening the frostbite. In other words, you could stand outside at 15 below, say, for what, 20 minutes with no wind in the sun and probably not have any effect happening yet. Whereas if you were standing facing the wind, yeah, that your skin is going to get frostbite quite a bit faster, because we're not able to supplant the temperature fast enough.
Gotcha. All right. Well, John, thanks for your insight. We always appreciate your insight.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, reality is reality. Everybody says, oh, it doesn't affect it. Yeah, it does, because the vehicle is going to cool down to whatever that air temperature is that much faster. That's what it boils down to. It's no different than, you know, it's no different than really how it affects the human anatomy, you know, or the animal.
Right, right, right. Excellent. John, thank you. So, hey, did you get your snowblower started? Just curious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, mine I don't have a problem with, unlike people who don't listen to the wise man.
Oh, I got mine started just fine the other day.
Well, yeah, after how many attempts over how long was that,
I just had to plug it in, that's all. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, the only reason it starts is because I bought it from you, and you wouldn't sell me a piece of junk. I know it, so there we have it.
Well, yeah, I try not to sell lemons, you know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Stay warm, John.
See ya.
All right. Oh, boy. It's always a classic when we have John call, isn't it?
Every single time. And we've been talking about weather all this way through. And do recall that this weather update is sponsored by Ryan Bonesack with Equitable AgriFinance. He is providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing and here to help you, local farmers and ranchers. Feel free to give him a call at 701-261-6529. I highly recommend Ryan. I've worked with him in the past myself. So today is a kickoff of a week of really good activity in North Dakota for agronomists. We have the Wide World of Weeds happening tomorrow in Fargo. We have the Soil and Water Workshop, which will be happening on Wednesday. It is the Sioux Falls Farm Show this week. Some of those I'll be attending. I look forward to shaking hands and meeting many of you at these events. But more importantly, we do also want to make sure that we take a break and catch up with the American Ag Net or the Northern Ag Network next. And wanted to let you know that our guest today who will be joining us is Nathan Valady. He is in the ag tech space here in this region, but also has a podcast, Ag Uncensored. He also has Boundary. So for those of you who are making those farm site maps for kids to play on, that's one of the projects that Nathan does. And I have lots of ag tech questions for him, especially after the Consumer Electronics Show was recently held in Las Vegas and ag was front and center, as they many times are during that event. So looking forward to catching up with Nathan after the markets. Be right back. Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for spending the afternoon with us. You're probably back inside from doing chores, just taking a little breather after having had lunch because maybe it's cold outside. It's a little bit of a breeze makes it even worse. So get those heavy-duty Carhartts or Duluth Trading coveralls back on because you don't want any exposed skin in this temperature. It's a bit breezy, whether you're farming or construction. You guys take it easy out there. It's a rough day to be in the outdoors. We have with us a guest today, Nathan Valady. And Nathan is a familiar sight in the ag tech space in this region. He also has a podcast, the Ag Uncensored Podcast. And Nathan, how are you doing today?
Coldish, I suppose. I gotta wear my hat for sure today because I don't have much hair on top, so gotta be careful.
Okay, I found this funny. When my grandmother was still alive, she would think that on super cold days that the cold would affect the phone lines. As a tech guy, I bet you're going to say, no, that can't actually happen.
I mean, it could break the lines if it's, you know, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know everything tech. I just know my world of tech a little bit.
I know, but I thought that was kind of a little cute grandma story. And tell me about your world of tech, your piece of it.
Well, so I've just been around the ag tech space before it was even called that, precision ag space, since I was a kid, really. So there's a lot been changing, a lot been going on. And I think there's a lot more about to change as well with the new administration and everything. So,
okay. So there's a lot there. And with new administration changing at the federal level, what do you think that does for ag tech? Does it give us more freedom? Does it really change anything that's already in development today?
Well, it probably doesn't change too much what's being developed, though I think it'll probably open more opportunities up as, I mean, there's kind of this seemingly want to privatize certain parts of government right now and reduce, you know, overspending and overwork. What fills those gaps is usually digital technology. And I think within the USDA, I know there's a want to do it. That's the only way you fill some of those gaps. And I mean, people are going to retire too. Like half the USDA is probably going to retire in the next 10 years. What do you feel? And you're not going to fill that gap with right. all those people. But there's a lot of work that can be done just digitizing certain factors, like how you report or how other mm-hmm. things are administered. AI coming around the bend. There's countless things that'll probably come out because of those things that'll just make everything more efficient.
So do we need to sink more money into the tech side of things just going ahead?
Well, I think one big thing, and I've talked about it before, is, you know, like you see NASA, for instance, they're doing more with private companies like SpaceX and, mm-hmm. and others. Maybe the USDA needs to do something more like that with the ag tech side of software and other things to, or like the military does, bid on the private sector to projects. And we don't see that, though, really in ag. It's like, how do we, maybe that's where it needs to go. Maybe it's the same amount of money, just allocated differently.
Any specific reason why we don't see that in ag?
I mean, food is food. There's different regulation to it and safety right. and all that. I suppose that's part of the reason. There's also a lot of crazy nuance to ag. I mean, every area is different. The way we grow corn here in Cass County is different than how people grow corn in Louisiana. So that's probably mm-hmm. a big reason to it. I mean, you build a rocket, it's kind of a rocket.
But it's different in ag in different parts of the country.
Yeah. Right. That's probably part mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah. But.
And so many multiple crops. And you made a great point, Nathan, when you said there will be some retirements coming up soon at USDA. When most people hear U.S. Department of Ag, they think about everything that happens in Washington. Oh, no. Think about what happens at your county levels yeah. with your Farm Service Agency offices, your FSA offices. Those are folks that are also going to wind up retiring. Mm-hmm. And at a county level, there is not an abundance of employees just waiting to pick up a new government job. So what you're saying about the tech space could really impact some of our more rural areas as well.
Well, something to think about. So about 10 months ago, I talked to the former head of one of the agencies within the USDA under the past Trump administration. And there was a whole factor going on there to basically re-engage digitizing all parts of the USDA, especially the FSA. And part of that came to be is because of COVID, they were forced to do different activities not in the county offices. There has to be a county office in every county in the United States, yet, you know, why is there a county office in downtown Dallas or downtown New York? And so right. there's a want to simplify that process, allow more people to work maybe more counties or digitally help there. And because of the natural reduction in staff and the costs, I mean, something's going to happen. It's just going to probably wait till the next farm bill to really, you know, cross the T's and dot the lowercase J's, as I like to say.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you look at recent press releases and so forth, just in the last day or so, they're talking about a renewed interest on the farm bill, which we've heard all along. It's just mm-hmm. a matter of making things happen now that administration changed as of this week. So we'll probably see some moving forward. When it comes to some of the things that are happening, though, that can increase that efficiency, whether governmentally or at a local farm level, do you think we've plateaued in what we do in ag tech today? Is there still an open horizon for discovery, or have we sort of hit a level where we found it all and now we're just waiting for funding to secure it?
I suppose it depends on the type of space. When I look at like software development and tools like that with data, like yield data from a satellite, yeah, there's some limits there. We've kind of plateaued a little bit. When you get into some of the more intense, you know, biological, genomics, all those things, with the advent of computer power and AI to figure out the complex nature of just nature, that's going to get really interesting because it's not just, you don't need maybe 100 data scientists in a lab to figure out some of these crazy sequences. You can start breaking that down in seconds. and really figuring out how this variety works, or this type of change in a plant or chemistry works in different ways, that's going to get probably pretty wild here, as long as we're allowed to do it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And some folks think, as you look at this new tech, it feels a little creepy, right? Like we're getting so much more of iRobot and things are thinking for us. Mm-hmm. But we don't physically have enough people for every job that we need. And things like Agent, the robotic weeder that's been on display up here in the Red River Valley and sugar beets, is a reality that could be useful to farms.
Well, and I think we almost need to maybe take a step back from the thought of robots and that type of automation in the field. Yeah, that's kind of coming. It's probably coming more in the high-value fruit and vegetable crop world, not as much the commodity side. Where you need to think of it, though, is more, there's these things that are called AI agents that are coming out. They're basically, I mean, think of an agent, like an insurance agent. They put together the policy and find the right deals and all that and kind of administer it. Well, AI agents are basically a computer version of those. They're task-oriented things. So think for a bank or for a grain marketer or for a crop insurance agent or something like that. They could have a slew of these AI agents to maybe cover more ground faster, do more policies, do more things. That's where the automation's coming. It's not as much as you think in the field. It's the processes that run the back end of ag. That's probably where you're going to see it, because you can't fill in, like you said, the people. So maybe an agronomist has three different AI agents that help him cover 100,000 more acres than he could by himself.
Suddenly you have a fleet. Okay, there's a lot more to ask about, especially because we just came off the Consumer Electronics Show. I want to ask some questions about that. I'm not sure that you've ever had the opportunity to attend, and I'm still waiting for Las Vegas to send me the invite to go there, but maybe one day they will. So we'll talk about some of that and what's come from it here when we return. Nathan Feledi is our guest today. We're just talking about all the things that go on in a space of agricultural technology and precision ag, and we'll do more when we return. Welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, where we're getting all high techy, talking about all the things that go on as far as high tech is concerned in ag. And so much of it, as our guest Nathan Feledi is talking about, happens on the back end with the software that we don't even think about. We can see the hardware up front, but there's so much more going on with the software. So, all right, Nathan, I have some maybe unusual questions, and I know we didn't necessarily talk about these, but sure. I'm just curious what your thoughts might be. And one of them is, when we see the Consumer Electronics Show every year in Las Vegas, it rolls out some pretty fascinating and amazing items. In fact, the iPhone was once shown there, and people thought that was fascinating, and yet here we are today. When you hear that John Deere was one of the top five exhibitors, are you surprised at that? Do you see them more as a innovative tech company than an equipment company these days?
I think they need to change the mantra around what they are, because when you're just known as an equipment company, it doesn't reach the masses as much. And John Deere's the largest ag brand in the world, so it's just a natural thing for them to connect more into the broader world of things to garner interest around it, and also to probably recruit people away. I mean, John Deere has the power to take people away from the Amazons, the Facebooks, the Googles of the world. And part of that is to be at a show like that is to actually showcase that they're on the same stage.
And when you think about what John Deere does, they've made some pretty big announcements that they want to make a whole seeding planting regimen autonomous. So from start to finish, that crop gets planted with an autonomous tractor, all the functions on the planter, like exact shot and so much more. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it's a feasible timeline for them?
Let's put it this way. As farms are going to get bigger, the top producers that farm the most are probably going to go that direction for reasons of efficiency and whatnot, even you know, just systems wise, that's just what they've done. And small farms will get reduced. That's how you fill those gaps, is technology. Now, is that great for the rural America? No, not necessarily, but there is no stopping it either. The system's not set up to stop that, to incentivize right. being smaller, unless you're in very niche areas. So
yeah, if you
they see the writing on the wall.
And some of those niche areas, like you said, might be more of, you know, bringing it back full circle, back to talking about like vegetable farms, specialty farms, because there they can see using some of this technology faster due to labor costs versus maybe some of our extremely large crop production farms that are corn, soybean, wheat, et cetera.
Well, and the other side that I don't think a lot of people, at least, and I know my friends don't back home that farm, there's a real teetering aspect of this. When you go outside the U.S., you go to Brazil or, you know, even Australia, but like other parts of Europe and, you know, we're going into Africa, these mega farms, I mean, they're million plus acre farms. They're huge. That's actually what they're building this for. They know the general, yep. normal, average farmer is not going to buy this. When you have a farm in Brazil that orders 200 new combines a year, of course they want automation. Mm-hmm. That doesn't exist here. But we also forget that, okay, you can then raise, you know, more corn cheaper. Well, there is a point already happening in the U.S. due to technology that it's becoming too expensive to grow baseline commodities here. So they'll just move production somewhere else. And technology will actually help in that. And mm-hmm. what that does, I don't, honestly, it's things are going to change a lot, especially with all the land changing hands in the next 20 years from people, you know, passing away, retiring. You add the two together, farms just get bigger and production will shift. Like in California, on high value crops with tech, they're leading the way, but they're losing acres to Peru for things like,
right.
you know, other fruits and vegetables, because they can hire 100 people for $10 a day.
Now, what would that mm-hmm. do to prices? You know, because if you're selling, you know, we're talking years down the road when, you know, we're selling off to corporations, AI is introduced a little bit more. Would that help bring prices down technically or not necessarily?
Probably down. So that's why the production might move to places where it's, you know, there's less regulation, there's cheaper labor.
Right.
Then there's markets that want more, you know, special tracking of things. You know, consumers in the U.S. want to more and more know where their food comes from. But we're not a huge market for that either. Not everyone cares. It kind of depends disparity where people, you know, where's the poverty line, more or less. The lower that poverty line is, they don't care where their food comes from. They just want food.
Right.
So technology is driving the in-betweens of all this. And it's hard for people to see it, but it's reality.
So it's an interesting debate about whether or not food costs will go down. Because once you've established a new level in the market, then prices generally don't fall below that. So, for example, we've done it with gasoline. How many times? Mm-hmm. We were at $2.50. Boom, it went to $4. So when it came back down to $3 or $3.25, everybody said, oh, gas is cheaper. That's how you establish a new level. Mm-hmm. And that has happened in food with inflation in the last 2 years as well. Even if those markets move out, and I think Nathan makes a great point about some of that specialty production moving to places like Peru, et cetera, your transportation costs aren't going to go down. There's stories in the news right now about the fact that the Panama Canal has a new reservation system. And so cargo freight prices are going up. So even if it's cheaper to produce in that country, the freight to get it back here will not go down. And they know we've established a new low in the marketplace.
Yep.
Additionally, because that product was raised in another country with very different regulations, they may not have as stringent FDA rules as we do. how are they going to get it through here without more tariff, et cetera? And will they care? Because as you said, Nathan, there's other markets out there that are willing to buy. So realistically, our whole food system is about to be in an incredible upset that I don't think we even realize.
Yeah, it's from the few I talk to that are kind of more, at least in tune to the specialty market, they're kind of freaking out, honestly. But then at the same time, they're not, because they see some of this technology. They see new markets open for it. It's like, oh, this lettuce was, the weeds were killed by a robot, not by a chemical. I can charge double for it. People will pay for it. Hmm. But some won't.
And that's very true. Yeah.
Some will, some won't. It depends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're exactly right. There's that huggy-touchy-feely feeling of it that, but this crop was raised differently. I want this one, and I'm still willing to pay for it. But the bigger concern across most of this country is the fact that people want to eat, and there's a lot of places where they're still struggling to fill their plates every day. Mm-hmm. So this discussion is not an easy one. There's a lot of things that are changing, and it's happening, just like you said, not even with the hardware, but with the software. And how does that drive this industry very differently?
Yeah.
Geez, look at that tangent we just had.
I could do this all day, but yeah, there's, how many tangents do you want to go down?
And Nathan and I were talking off air, Bridget, about with AI technology and self-automation, how many insurance companies are going to cover, you know, these large tractors, and Nathan was saying there's some that may not, and then so that's going to limit what we can do as well, right?
Well, if you have $1 million tractor, 800 horsepower, and somehow it gets disconnected and can't manage itself, how do you stop it? And will that run into a house or a business? And that's always been a struggle with the larger automation versus smaller things is the insurance side of it. That's actually been kind of the number one thing I've always heard from the OEMs is it's not about that we can or can't do it. It's about, can it be covered if something happens?
Okay. So that, and I know we don't have a lot of background information on this, but it sort of leads to the whole situation with right to repair. Minnesota and Illinois are two states that are now suing John Deere for the right for farmers to repair their own farm equipment. In talking to a John Deere technician, here's a response to that. Can farmers do a certain amount of thing on their tractors? Absolutely. Farmers, the vast majority of them are very mechanically inclined. But if you think you are changing just one small component and you unhook the negative and the positive in the wrong order off the battery, you can fry a computer on that machine. There are 9 different computers on that John Deere tractor valued at roughly $30,000 each, those microprocessors. So if you do that in your shop and John Deere is liable for the warranty, even though you messed it up, see the power struggle going on there?
Yeah, I've heard it on both sides, and honestly, the right to repair, you have to be really careful for that, those exact reasons. And then you get to the safety reasons. If you know you have these giant machines that cost a lot, if you don't do the right thing, where's the liability? Who's holding it, and when are they holding it? If they change something, you know, I want to increase the horsepower to this machine. Okay, well, it's probably going to increase the heat and the temperature, and that could make it burn up. Or, you know, in a field, and then that lights a field on fire, then that house, farm down the road lights on. Like, where does it sit? And that's what's tough here. So I get the side of John Deere. Like, these are expensive machines. And
I certainly see a farmer's side where right now, especially in this economy, he wants to make sure he cuts his labor and his shop hour cost by having technicians come out, and your time down that you're waiting for a technician to come out and fix that piece of equipment in the right manner. It's a mess. Technology can be great until it's not.
Well, and a lot of it is with, you know, some of the environmental standards with DEF, and this is where some of this is changing. We were talking earlier to production is maybe more is going to South America. They don't have those rules. They don't have to put DEF in their tractors and combines. Right. And then you like, well, why? Why here? Why there? Why not? You know, and all of that just makes a mess of it all. But yeah, there's two sides to it all. There's always is.
I know.
It can be tough.
So, Nathan, I really appreciate the fact that you are willing to come in and debate. We get a very loose set of points that we want to talk about, and then we just take off from there and we'll talk about any of them. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. My wife always says that I shouldn't debate as much. And I just think I'm just talking about stuff, but maybe I am debating.
It's all good. It's all good.
I don't know. I think we're talking. Yeah. So thank you to Nathan Filati for joining us today. And folks, stay tuned. I believe we still have a set of boat show tickets we've got to give away now, don't we, Dean?
I believe we do. And we'll we'll be giving those away coming up after the break. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus on this frigid Monday. I tell you what, it is coldest air we've had so far this season, with wind chills currently still at 40 below or colder. And what a time to think about summer, and nothing better than the boat show to talk about that. So we're going to give away two tickets to caller number four to go to the boat show as we head towards the end of the weekend, of the upcoming weekend. So if you want to two tickets to the boat show, shoot us a call, caller number four, 701-293-9000, and those tickets will be yours.
Big reason why you might want those tickets, it's like $12 at the door. I looked it up on their website. So save yourself a little cash, spend more money at the concession stand that way, get yourself some tickets to the boat show.
That's right. So again, we'll take caller number four, 701-293-9000. Hello, you're caller number one. Hurry up, dial, try again. You are caller number two. Try again. And you are caller number three. Try again. And here we have it. And who is this? Caller number four, congratulations.
This is Chad.
Chad?
Yep.
Chad, have you ever been to the boat show?
No, I haven't. I have, I guess.
Okay, all right. Well, congratulations. You got a set of tickets here, and it will be a little warmer to go there for next weekend, so that's good news. You won't be fighting 30 to 50 below wind chills. So, Chad, hang on the line, and our producer, Addison, will get all the information from you that we need.
All right, thanks.
All right. So there we go. Yeah, and, hey, what a better time to start thinking about spring and summer with this
Before you even get to that, think about Valentine's Day. And right now, Valentine's Day is approaching fairly quickly. Remember, most of you are out there thinking already about buying that delicious box of chocolates. You will see an increase in chocolate prices this year. Cocoa has gone up tremendously. It actually has taken an increase of about 51% over the last couple of years, which is a historic high for a commodity crop to take such a major leap in cost. There have been supply issues happening on the Ivory Coast due to the fact that they had a drought followed by a drop in production. And so they're finding that right now there's a lot more people who want cocoa for chocolate than they can supply, and thus driving up price. Even since Halloween, candy producers such as Hershey have reported an increase in the production of sweets that do not contain cocoa. And so they're selling more things like gummy bears and so forth, where they can step away from the chocolate and the cost of it. So you may see less chocolate on the shelf. You're definitely going to see a higher priced chocolate. Again, is one of those commodities that we don't normally see take such an increase. In 1 year alone, it took about 22% jump up in what you're paying as a buyer in order to manufacture the chocolate. So keep that in mind. Stock up. Maybe look at a layaway plan for the really big chocolate hearts when you pick one up.
And Bridget, what about increases in the Panama Canal shipping rates? How's that? That'll affect prices here, won't it?
Tremendously. So actually, they put in a new reservation system at the Panama Canal so that you could find a slot to move your cargo ship through in a timely fashion. But you have to pay for that. And because of those payments and changes in the reservation system, shipping charges are indeed going to be going up. A lot of folks may not realize that it's the fastest route that takes our ports, so such as the Gulf of Mexico ports like Louisiana, all the way around as fastest route into Asia. What goes through our U.S. port or to through the Panama Canal from our U.S. ports? 29% of our U.S. soybeans, 18% of corn, and 91% of sorghum. So we are going to indeed see some increased shipping costs that go along with that. Now, of course, we all know that there's a lot of discussion being made about whether or not the U.S. will take control of
that
the Panama
Canal. That
was
my next question, right?
That is too far to tell. That reservation system has happened now. Those price increases are taking effect right now as we are seeing product on ships coming through the Panama Canal. So we have a ways to wait until we sort out who owns what when it comes to land rights, et cetera.
Wow. Interesting. Well, that'll be something to watch over the next year, probably.
We will indeed. Yeah. That's not going to go away.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. For Bridget, myself, stay warm out there. Dangerous wind chills continue all the way through tomorrow afternoon. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.